People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note, the first one for July, and July is Fine Music Radio's 23rd birthday month. And Music Works is a non-profit organization that uses the power of music to unlock potential in the lives of children and their communities. And in celebration of Fine Music Radio's 23rd birthday, we're going to be asking our listeners to support this worthy organization. Music Works was founded in September 2002, and it was registered as a non-profit organization in November 2003 as the Music Therapy Community Clinic. Two music therapists started on a part-time voluntary basis, offering music therapy sessions to school children in Heideveld in Cape Town. The community was very supportive of this early work, which led to the establishment of an official music therapy program. And in the course of this program, here on People of Note, I hope to be able to enlighten you considerably about this extraordinary work that they do. Because with me here is the executive director and co-founder of Music Works, Sunel Fushier. Sunel, a warm welcome to People of Note.
Thank you, Rodney, and it's such a privilege to be here.
It's a privilege to have you and talking about this organization. I gave a little kind of potted history there, but I mean, it must be much more complicated. How did it start? It says here two music therapists, I presume you're one of them. So what made you do it right at the beginning?
Well, we were invited by the Safe School Committee of the schools in the Heideveld area. And at that time, the project, the Safe Schools project, was funded by the Education Department. And this school committee, made up of teachers and some healthcare professionals in the community, decided that they wanted to offer their children not just counseling, but also other kinds of therapy. So they approached my colleague, Karen Torrance. She started working with groups of children, and I joined her. And the children that were referred were mostly children that were showing behavior challenges in school, and this was often related to trauma that they'd experienced. Heideveld is an area where there's quite a lot of gang violence, substance abuse, and this, of course, has an impact on the children's well-being.
And possibly also domestic abuse, I dare say.
Yes, yes, very high prevalence. So we started working with the children, really using music. We were trained as music therapists. We both had just qualified from the University of Pretoria's master's degree in music therapy. And we started working with the children and seeing that music gave an expression to the complicated emotions that they were feeling inside and often couldn't verbalize. What we see often when children, when they've experienced trauma, is that they struggle to self-regulate. So, you know, these would be children that the smallest incident sets them off and they can become very aggressive. They struggle to manage their emotions. They're very easily triggered. And this is part of the hypervigilant state that they're constantly finding themselves in.
They can also be very quiet, can't they? They can also lapse into silence. I saw a fascinating video on your website of a little girl who just wasn't speaking.
And that's the other extreme of it.
Yes.
Is they completely withdraw from social contact, mm-hmm. become very quiet in the classroom, stop engaging with friends, stop participating really in life. But what happens when they come together as a music group is the music becomes the motivator for them to participate and to take initiative. For some, this is very hard in the beginning due to low self-esteem. And to ask a child to play something on a drum can be really threatening. But as music therapists, we trained to create a safe space, and eventually children become more confident. So what happens is they're experiencing a sense of mastery. Often these are children that are constantly experiencing failure. They're struggling at school, home life isn't working out. But here, all of a sudden, they are now becoming competent on a musical instrument. And I think it's important to say that it's not about, we're not focusing on the musical competence, but we facilitate musical experiences in a way that everyone feels competent. So we're using instruments like drums and xylophones. That's fairly easy to play.
Mm-hmm. And so you're not giving them music lessons about how to play a piano or a violin. It's a drum, it's a xylophone, it's something you can hit.
Yes.
And make music.
Yes. So in these groups, we would you know, offer the children, for example, do an activity, join the band. And we would have a song that kind of provides the structure, and there would be space within the song for each child to play something, you know, of their own accord. And this is where we can hear a quality of who and what this child is. So you can imagine a child that's playing very timidly and softly and slowly. You will hear that in the music. And there our goal would be to help them extend and expand that sound, become more confident, expand their range of experiences. And also to get back to the regulation aspect of it is when you're making music in a band, the music becomes, it's almost like entrainment. You have to wait for others. You have to wait your turn. You need to sometimes copy. Sometimes you take the lead. So in that moment, the children experience a sense of regulation. And the feedback that we were getting from the teachers was the children are more able to focus in class. They're better able to regulate their behavior. Children that were very quiet and withdrawn are showing more confidence, participating more, being more social. And this really, the feedback that we were getting from the teachers made us realize that this isn't a therapeutic medium that we're getting in these communities, but it seems to really be effective for children that are growing up in communities where there's high levels of violence.
My goodness. Okay. So you've given me a host of questions now that I want to ask you. So after that introduction, let's have a bit of a breather. And what have you given us for your first choice of music? Is there any music therapy you're going to be dishing out to FMR listeners?
The first piece of music is actually a very short piano piece. And this is from a movie soundtrack called The Man of Snowy River. And I chose this piece of music because it linked for me to my own experience of music and what music contributes to my life. So I had piano lessons, you know, when I was young and participated in exams and I stayed fit, and I always dreaded every single experience of performing. But I realized I was at my happiest when I could plod away at the piano. So I was very grateful for my classical training to give me the techniques and skills to structure the plodding. But it was when I was just playing away at the piano, and I think I realized at a young age that what emerged was, in a way, giving sound to how I was experiencing myself at that moment. So this piece of music, my dad had bought the vinyl of it, and I listened to that vinyl over and over again until I could figure out the melody and accompaniment. And I think, you know, listening to it now, it takes me back to who and what I was as a child at that time.
Thank you. well, some rather glorious piano music. What was that, Sunil?
That was Jessica Sunata from the soundtrack A Man from Snowy River, and the composer is Bruce Rowland.
And a special choice of Sunil Fushia, who's my guest. Sunil is the executive director and co-founder of Music Works, the organization that we here on Fine Music Radio are supporting for our 23rd birthday month in July, and encouraging you at home to contribute. Sunil, I'm intrigued. You said you've got a master's degree, and music therapy turned out to be what you did, and you started learning the piano. At what point did you decide you didn't want to be, for example, an orchestral musician or a concert pianist, and move towards music therapy? When did that happen?
I never saw myself as a performer. I enjoyed playing music, but not on stage. Mm-hmm. But music was definitely a central part of who I was, and I realized that I wanted somehow for my career to involve music. But I was also very much leaning towards psychology. And I was still in high school when I heard about this thing called music therapy. And at that time, there was no training available in South Africa. So I decided to study music. I did a BMus at the University of Pretoria, along with psychology subjects. And as I was doing my undergraduate training, they started the first training course in music therapy at the university. So at the moment, this is still the only training in music therapy. It's a 2 years master's degree. It's structured very similar to a master's in psychology. So there's a theory aspect, a research aspect, and then also a 1,000-hour internship. And this leads to registration with the Health Professions Council of South Africa. So music therapy falls under the umbrella of arts therapies, and it's a regulated healthcare profession.
Is music therapy as a concept a fairly new concept, or has it been around for a while and we've only just started it in South Africa?
So the training at Pretoria has been going for 20 years.
So it's hardly new.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
But in the rest of the world, in the States and Europe, it's been going on for even longer.
And presumably, okay, you deal with children, as we've discovered, who are traumatized, have suffered abuse or whatever. But I presume music therapy can also apply to adults.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the really valuable aspects of music therapy, is that it's applicable to a wide range of population groups. So music therapists work with children who has disabilities, or within special education. We work with adults with mental health issues, and then also music therapists would work with the elderly, specifically with dementia, Alzheimer's, and there's more and more research being published internationally and also locally in South Africa about the impact and the value that music can bring.
I wonder if you saw that film, I forget what it was called, where there was an amazing scene with a woman, an elderly woman who was suffering from dementia, and she couldn't remember anything. They put headphones on her. Did you see that? And she started to listen to music from her youth. And she just started talking about her husband, her children. Everything came back to her. It was an extraordinary scene. And that clearly is what it does.
Yes. That's one aspect of music therapy. And I think the film Alive Inside is
what it was called.
You know, really showed how music, it's so much more than just something that we absorb, but it's something that it really resonates within us. And I think specifically about the angle of that film, there's a lot of research coming out in neuroscience about how music impacts the brain. And one of the things we know is that it's the one medium that triggers all areas of the brain. So it makes sense that it would, you know, be applicable to a range of conditions, especially when there's neurological impairment. And that film, I think, was very powerful in demonstrating the power of music. As music therapists, perceptive listening to music is one way in which we would use music. But we're very much focused also on active participation in music. So, yes, listening to music can trigger emotions, it can trigger memories. But the active participation in music, that's where you really start working on relational aspects. And often impairment like Alzheimer's, or a diagnosis like Alzheimer's or dementias, lead to social impairment. And often people then are not able to connect with others. And what we find in when they're making music with the music therapists is that we can reestablish some of those social connections that are often lost.
As you said earlier, and it tells you more about the person, someone who's very tentative, someone who might. I think you told me a story about someone bashing a drum, a little girl, and that you were astonished at the violence with which she beat this drum.
Yes, and I think that's, you know, that's why we use active participation in music. When someone is playing an instrument, the therapist will be reflecting, we would say matching, meeting and matching the client's music. But what the client is doing is saying something about their emotional state, psychological state at that time. And we're able to translate that into music and then contain and support that, but also help them possibly shift. So that story about the little girl who herself had gone through abuse but had withdrawn completely from society. So you wouldn't imagine that there were these big angry feelings within her, but she was able to express that through music, through her loud beating. But then gradually, and that's also part of the goal-directed process in music therapy, it's not just beating on the drum, kind of a cathartic experience and we all feel better, but we're clinically trained to then direct the music to reach therapeutic goals. So for this child, it was, how do we help her to also move to, so to express these big feelings, but also move to other states of feelings that mm-hmm. she could express.
And another one I saw, I think on your website on a video, was someone playing a guitar, a therapist playing a guitar, and this little child sort of reaching out with her hand or his hand and trying to stroke the strings, that being the effort that child wanted to make to participate.
Yes, and actually brings me to another story that I'll share, which I think that is a very good example of. So we had a therapist working at a hospital within a palliative care unit, and she was working with a 7-year-old child who had for his whole life been severely disabled. So he had no communication, very little voluntary movement, and he was at the end of his life. And the music therapist sat down by the child's bed with a guitar, and she matched the child's breathing, because that was really the only movement and sound that she had to work on. And in the very first session, he turned his head to see where the music was coming from. So there was an instant, you know, she could see that he was aware
yes.
of her. And then soon after, in about the third session, he started making sounds and he started vocalizing. And they had a kind of a musical dialogue. And what was really special about this was that the nurses, the first time he made it sounds, they surrounded his bed and some were in tears, because they'd never realized that within this very broken body was a whole child that had the ability to communicate. And I think that's really one of the aspects of that at Music Works we really value, is not only the significance that the music therapy has for the child, but also the impact it can have on the carers, the parents, the teachers. They see what children are able to do through music, and this shifts how they perceive the children and how they respond to the children.
Sure, and you've got to be strong. Watching that video was quite a traumatic experience for me, I have to say. Let's relax with another piece of music, Sunel.
So the next piece of music is the Fore Requiem, Opus 48, and it's the Sanctus, the third movement. And I chose this piece of music because it actually reminds me of the story. It's a very short piece. It's about 3 minutes long, but there's so much happening in the 3 minutes. It builds up to this big crescendo and then very quickly into a decrescendo. And I think for me, it's almost symbolic of how the magic that we sometimes have the privilege to experience as a music therapist, for example, in the story, where you're able to form this very intimate contact with a child. And I think it's also about how it could seem quite small and insignificant to someone on the outside, but actually the impact that it can have for that child can be quite profound.
And life-changing.
Mm.
That's the Sanctus from the Requiem by Gabriel Fauré. Another choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week, Sunil Fushir, the executive director and co-founder of Music Works. And we're talking about the extraordinary effect of music therapy on children and others. Sunil, first of all, I noticed just now you referred to these children as clients and not as patients. Why do you call them clients?
I think it has, well, it's two things really. The first is that we do work in a range of contexts. So we're not always working within medical settings where we would generally refer to the people that we work with as patients. But I think another aspect to that is that this is a resource-focused intervention. So we're really focusing on what the children or the adults that we're working with are able to do. When we acknowledge the diagnosis or the disability or the trauma, but it's really focusing that which is whole and healthy within them that music really connects with and that music can give expression to. So I think it's those two aspects.
Okay, that make it in fact more comfortable to say client in a sense.
Yes.
But now when you are working with these people, I've noticed it's not only people who have suffered a trauma or abuse or whatever, but it is also physical disabilities, medical disabilities that you're working with. I think things like Down syndrome as well, all that as well. So it's the two sides. It's not just someone who's had abuse.
Yes, absolutely.
Or and a trauma, in fact.
Yes, and quite a lot of the research on the effectiveness of music therapy comes from out of the context of mental health, disabilities, and in fact the pioneers of music therapy worked specifically with children with autism, with children with a range of mental and physical impairments.
Okay, so now what I'm keen to hear is, what sort of programs do you run? Are there different programs for different ages or different conditions? Tell me a little bit about the kind of variety of programs that you run.
So Music Works, we have two main programs. The one is our music therapy program. So here we've got our music therapists. And we partner with other organizations. So currently we're working at the Sarah Fox Children's Hospital. So here specifically we're working with children with disability, children with HIV and AIDS, children that have experienced neglect and abuse and that are hospitalized over long periods. Then we're also working in children's homes. We're also working within school contexts and also in two different centers catering for children with disabilities and special needs.
How big is your organization?
We have 9 staff members and we reach on average between 550 and 600 children every year.
Good grief. Those 9 people, is each of them a music therapist?
No, so we've got a team of people. Our staff members that work on site directly with our beneficiaries are music therapists and also community musicians.
Okay.
So they actually contribute mostly to our second program, which is, we call it our Music for Life program. So this is an after-school program, and here we're offering gumbo dancing and marimba bands. And our focus here specifically, we're working in communities where there's high levels of gang violence, and music, these weekly music groups, really keeps the children off the streets.
Mm.
But I think more importantly, it creates that sense of belonging. So we're not only focused on the musical skills that the children acquire, but really for us, the process is more important. So what are the children learning about themselves as they're part of this band?
As you said, it's more to do with themselves than with learning music. You said that a while ago, didn't you? Music is the tool, really, to learn about themselves.
Yes, and I think in the communities where we're working in, music is often what attracts them to the program. One of the things that I'm always astounded by is the musicality, the natural musicality of the children that we get to work with. So, you know, we never select children on their musical ability. That never even comes into question. But we always end up with groups of amazing musicians that have performed on various stages, on Artscape stage, and some of them have even traveled overseas. But again, the focus is, what are the children learning about themselves? We often speak about the issues that are happening in their community and how they can positively contribute to their community. So we've had quite a number of young people who started off perhaps in a therapy group, moved from there into our after-school music programs, into a marimba band, and then ended up being employed by our organization to teach younger children in their communities. So it's really about helping young people to make positive choices for their lives and to contribute to the change that they want to see in their communities.
And when a child comes to you who has been referred to by whoever as being abused or dysfunctional or traumatized, is the first session with a drum or whatever on their own, or do they immediately go into a group?
It really depends on the program that we're running with the specific partner organization. Okay. So in some, we're running a project at a school in Lavender Hill. So here the children do often, when they get referred, enter a music therapy group first, and we would work with them for between 6 to 12 months, and then they would move from there into a marimba band. And again, I think that's something that we really value as an organization is the long-term relationships that we build with children. We don't believe that short-term quick, you know, there's no such thing as a quick fix when we're dealing with complex social, emotional, and psychological issues. And what we found is that our team, and especially our community musicians, become role models for the young people. So building these trusting relationships over a long period of time is really important.
That's very interesting. So it's not, And the other thing is, you imagine that someone who might be traumatized going to group, I think this is why I asked, you might be shy to bang a drum. But I presume the group kind of welcomes them. It's a sort of give and take on the scale.
Absolutely. And our music therapists, you know, that's where the music therapy training comes in, is how do you create that safe space? And when we talk about safe, it's really thinking about how is it mentally safe? For a child, this might be very threatening, but how do you facilitate music in a way that enables them to find the courage and to find the voice within themselves? So that has to do with the therapist's skill of how much do they, you know, offer a child, how much space do they give them to step into it in their own time and in their own way. And again, how we're responding to the children musically. So if a child is very shy, withdrawn, you can imagine that our music would reflect that. Yes. So the music would be quieter, more timid, perhaps more tender. Sometimes children come in and they're just ready to play and want to bang away and really maybe dominate the rest of the group. And again, musically, we can reflect this. We can play loud, march-like music, which meets that child. But then through the music, we can coax them to a place that's perhaps more
slightly less frenetic.
Yes.
Sunil, another choice of music, your third choice, in fact.
So this is the very popular Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 3. And this is performed by Andrei Gavrilov. And I specifically chose this recording because he plays the Ossia cadenza. And for me, this whole piece, but specifically this cadenza, it's a very passionate piece of music. And again, I think it reflects that emotional quality that music holds. So this piece of music moves into lighter, tender areas, but then also very quickly into darker, more unpredictable places. Thank you.
Well, there we heard part of the first movement of the Piano Concerto No. 3 by Rachmaninoff, known as the Rach 3, ever since the David Helfgott days. And that was with the original cadenza that Rachmaninoff wrote. And he wrote another one, which was somewhat easier, but that was the first difficult one, played by Andrei Gavrilov, and the choice of my guest, Sunel Fushir, the executive director and co-founder of Music Works, which, as I said, is a non-profit organization that uses the power of music to unlock potential in the lives of children and their communities. What I would like to know, you've shared some wonderful stuff with us, Sunel, thank you, but how do you quantify results of the therapy? What sort of success rate do you have?
We do have a range of assessment tools that enables us to track the progress within therapy sessions. And currently, Music Works is working in partnership with the University of Pretoria on a research project to develop an assessment tool specifically when we were working in the area of trauma, children that have experienced trauma. And here, for example, we are able to quantify children's progress in terms of things like self-regulation, how their confidence develops, how their social engagement within the group but also in the classroom improves, and their ability to show empathy to others. So these tools are really helpful in getting quantitative data on the progress that children are making. But we also value qualitative data. As I mentioned before, part of our training as music therapists also includes a research component. So, you know, from the very beginning in the training, we're made aware of the importance of being able to provide evidence for this work. And it is an evidence-based practice. We're drawing from evidence that comes from research projects all over the world. But what I wanted to say was also including the qualitative data. So as Music Works, we would often go back to the teachers, to the carers, to the parents, and get a sense from them of what changes have they observed in the children. And then also, where possible, we ask the children themselves, because they're really the experts of how music is helpful for them.
But now, you mentioned earlier as well, you said it's not a quick fix thing. Mm. And you mentioned, I think you said 6 months at one stage. I suppose there's a point where the child leaves you and goes away, and now you assume or hope that they've been set on a course to lead the rest of their lives. Is there any contact after that, or is that you've done your job and they now, the magic has worked, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say.
We do at times have children that stay in our program for longer periods. So as I mentioned earlier, they might enter music therapy and then move on to a marimba band. So in the course of our organization's work, we have been able to track children through 3 or 4 years. Often in our work, when we're working in hospitals or children's home, we're working with the children that are there, and they might be there for a short period of time, and then they move on. And I think in both cases, what's really important to us as therapists, and that we're quite conscious of when we're practicing our sessions with children, is how is this transferable to life outside the music therapy session? So is the self-confidence they've built in the session, does it sustain to the hospital ward or the classroom? So there the follow-up evaluations is really important. Often our work also has to do with making teachers and nurses and carers and parents aware of what we're observing in music therapy.
Sure. I'm sure that's particularly important, actually.
Yes, and often we might see something that music unlocks in this child that the people in their life were not aware of, like, for example, that child's ability to communicate. Or it's often, you know, again, I was speaking earlier about children that have experienced trauma in schools, often experiencing the sense of failure. But what it does to the parents or the teachers when they see this child performing marimbas with a group on stage. We often have community concerts where children get to showcase what they've done in their after-school music programs. And many times parents would come to us and say, "We didn't know our children could do this." Gosh. I think it's quite a sad statement because it speaks of the hopelessness that often happens in communities where there's a lot of trauma. But also it speaks of the hope that music brings.
I wonder if any of them go on to want to learn a musical instrument professionally and become a musician.
Those that have been in our programs that we have been able to track, you know, long term, some of them do continue to play marimbas, and it often has to do with opportunities available to them.
And finances, I suppose,
exactly,
as well.
Exactly, yes.
So, Nell, and what about therapists? Music therapy, is it a growing interest among people, young people going to university? Do you have access to people who want to do this sort of work?
Yes, so the training program at the University of Pretoria runs annually, and they often have quite a long list of people applying. They usually take between 5 and 7 students per year. But there's a constant flow of students moving into the program. And actually, Music Works also partners with the University of Pretoria. We do some aspects of the training of these students. We offer a community music therapy module to the students. But we also have quite a lot of international students that do an internship with our organization. And I think it's, you know, if we look at the music therapy numbers, both locally and internationally, it's definitely growing. I think as the medical profession and other healthcare professionals become aware of the value that music therapy can contribute, it's becoming more and more popular.
Good. I'm going to ask you in a moment about finances, the vulgar word of finances, but let's have another choice of music.
So the next piece of music that I chose is the song Ukutula. It's a close-up prayer, and this one is performed by the Cape Town Youth Choir. And I wanted to include a choral piece of music today because music has this wonderful ability to bring everyone involved into a shared space. And whether it's singing in a choir or playing in an ensemble, or even if you think of thousands of people standing at a rugby stadium and singing the national anthem, the musicologist Christopher Small coined the term musicking. What he referred to is that music isn't something that's static, but when people are participating in music, it moves them and it brings them into a shared musical but also a social space. So it's yet another aspect of music that we tap into as music therapists.
Thank you.
That was, as you said, a Xhosa song, was it? Ukutula, a choice of my guest, Sunil Fushia of Music Works. We're reaching the end of the program after a fascinating conversation, Sunil. And as I said at the beginning, July is Fine Music Radio's 23rd birthday month, and traditionally we try to give back to people. And this year we've chosen Music Works, and we're inviting the support of our listeners at the cost of 200 rands an hour for a music therapy session for one child. And you can visit FMR's website for more information about that, and we'll be telling you about it during the course of July. But talking about things like this, getting people to help you, financial logistics, financial must be a challenge for you. I mean, as you said, Sunil, you are a registered organization. This is not a sort of airy-fairy thing. It's a proper registered organization.
Yes, finances, I think, for any nonprofit is always one of the biggest challenges. Our organization have, over the years, attracted donors that we've been able to build sustainable relationships with, and I think that speaks to the deep ethical approach that we have as an organization and our ability to tick all the boxes and all the checks and keep all the checks and balances in place. But working towards financial sustainability is an ongoing process.
I'm sure, because you have to pay salaries, don't you, to all these music therapists who are highly qualified.
Yes.
Well, I'm rather hoping that we at Fine Music Radio can help you in what sounds like a truly extraordinary organization, Music Works. And so, thank you for your time, Sunil. But what is your last piece? Because you said there's an interesting story here.
Yes, so the last piece of music is a song that's written and performed by Lisa Beekman. We approached Lisa to write a song for Music Works. And what we didn't know at the time was that she herself had been through a traumatic event a few years before. And after this, she stopped writing music. So in a way, her trauma silenced her. And she agreed to write the song for Music Works. And as she started familiarizing herself with the organization and with the children that we're working with, the stories of the children resonated with her. And she was able to find her voice again. And this song is the result of that process. And it is called This Is How Music Works.
And she wrote it.
Yes.
She wrote it and is performing it.
And is performing it, yes.
So now it's been fascinating talking to you. All strength to your arm, to you and to Music Works. And keep in touch with us so that we can, from time to time, help you.
Thank you, Rodney.
My guest, Sunil Fushia. And now, here is that song.
This is how music works, silence when you've got no words. Taking this child from the shadow to the light. That's our music world. That's our music world.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
This December, something extraordinary is coming to Cape Town. Experience the global phenomenon Matilda the Musical, inspired by the magic of Roald Dahl, live on stage at Artscape. The New York Post says, believe the hype. Don't miss the musical of the decade. Proudly brought to you by Peter Turin and GWB Entertainment in association with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Be a genius. Book now.
FMR.